Michael attempted to show from the context that the prophets here were false. And the way he did that is look at verse 1. It said, in that day there should be a fountain open to the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. So he assumed that meant that okay, so the blood of Christ is taking care of sin and uncleanness, and these things, idols, unclean spirits, prophets, that's the sin and uncleanness that it's going to take care of. Now, that's a pretty good argument. I'm glad he's made arguments before. He finally made an argument on the context, but it won't work. Because the blood of Christ allows us to be forgiven for idolatry, but it doesn't take idols away. You see what I'm saying? If you commit idolatry, you can be forgiven by the blood of Christ, but the blood of Christ doesn't take idolatry away. Let me prove that to you. In Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9, and there are a lot of passages that say this same thing, the Bible says that Jesus tasted death for every man. Compare that with 1 John 2, 1, verses 1 and 2. Jesus died for everybody, Christian and non-Christian. He shed his blood for everybody. If the blood of Christ took away the idols out of the land, that would mean even the non-Christian would have idols, because Jesus shed his blood for them too. So that's not what the point of the verse is. The point of the verse is that he shed his blood for sin and for uncleanness. Forgiveness of sin. And so that won't work. It just won't work. Because if that were the case, there would be no idols anywhere, not even among non-Christians, because the blood of Christ was shed for every man. Now back in Zechariah chapter 13, verse 2, it says, verse 3, and he shall come past that any shall yet prophesy. Other translations say still, yet or still. Michael, that doesn't imply that the same people will still be prophesying. Yet or still implies that the activity would continue, not necessarily the same person. Now, the reason I give you these illustrations, I try to make them simple, ice cream and Andy Griffith illustrations. I give you illustrations to help you see that you're misunderstanding and putting too much the wrong idea on a word. And this is what you're doing here. Yet or still, in this case, it wouldn't imply that the same ones were still prophesying. It would imply that the prophesying was still going on. If any yet or still are prophesying. In other words, the prophesying was still going on. It doesn't mean the same people. Let me give you a simple illustration to help you see that. Some years back, the NFL, National Football League, players went on strike. We know what that means. That means they quit playing because they wanted some more benefits, some more money or something. Major League football players, National Football League players went on strike. If any man yet or still played, they were called scabs. They were substitutes. They were people who weren't in the Major League, the National Football League before, and they brought them up to play their game. If any shall yet play football, they were called scabs. I didn't come up with the name. That's what they called them. It wasn't the same players, but the activity was continuing. The National Football League was going to continue to play their games with substitute players in the strike. And companies do that. They have a strike. Sometimes they'll go ahead. Sometimes they won't work. Sometimes they'll bring in replacement players, if you call them NFL, or people who work. It's not the same people. If any shall yet work, the activity is the same. That's what's in Zechariah 13, verse 3. The only reason I bring up these simple illustrations is to help you see that you're taking an English word and you're not putting the right meaning on it. Yet does not imply it's the same people prophesying. It implies the same activity is going on. Prophesying is going on. But verse 3 and 4 makes it clear it's talking about false prophets. Absolutely cannot be. It would be impossible for it to be the false prophets, because verse 3 and 4, after it said the prophets would pass out of the land, it says there'll still be false prophets. There'll still be people going around prophesying falsely. If I said that all animals, that all dogs had left my property, how about this deer? We get deer go across my property. All deer are off my property. And then I said, and it wasn't a contradiction, but I said, and they're both true, that I saw an animal on the property. Would you think it was a deer, or would you think it was a dog? You wouldn't think it was a deer. I just got through saying that the deer were gone. This verse says the prophets are gone. He says it's a false prophet, but verses 3 and 4 says there's still false prophecy going on. So what would verse 2 have to be? Couldn't be any deer on my property if I told the truth. It'd have to be another kind of animal, wouldn't it? It's not a false prophet in verse 2. Now, I made an argument, and Michael acted like he responded to it, but he didn't. I said, if the false prophets pass out of the land, if that's false prophets, we both agree, really, that's the end of the world. That false prophets are going to continue all the way up to the end.
We may disagree on some of the details about the end of the world. I'm not sure. But that's we basically, in basic simplistic formula, we both agree on that. And I said, well, that wouldn't make any sense because if the false prophets pass out of the land when the earth is burned up at the end of the world, there's not any land for them to pass out of. Everything's burned up. Here's his reply. If you're burned up, you are going to be gone. Yeah, that's right. I agree with that. That doesn't meet my point. What I was saying is the land would still be there. When it says the false prophets will pass out of the land, that would imply that the false prophets are gone, but that the land would still be there. Yet at the end of the world, when he thinks the false prophets will cease, the land won't be there. It'll all be burned up. Land, false prophets, true prophets, chairs, tables, buildings, everything. 2 Peter 3, verse 10. The earth and all the works therein shall be burned up. I believe that. So my point was not answered. He answered it by saying, yes, you will be burned up. Yes, I agree that the false prophets will be burned up at the end of the world. That's not the point. The point was, what about the land? The land will be burned up at the end of the world. Yet this verse says some prophets are going to pass out of the land. Certainly has to be before the land is burned up, else there wouldn't be any land for them to be passed out of. That the deer can't pass out of my property if my property's not even there. That assumes my property's still there, but the deer are gone. Now that's pretty simple. Very simple. If you don't understand that, it's because you don't want to understand it. When it says the prophets will pass out of the land, that implies the land's still there. That doesn't fit the false prophets because we agree when the false prophets pass out of the land, the earth's going to be burned up. There won't be any land for them to pass out of. Yes, they will be burned up, but the land won't. When these prophets pass out of the land will still exist. According to verse 2. As I said, it's very simple. Verses 3 and 4, you answer me this. I'm just repeating myself. Is that false prophets or not? If that's false prophets in verses 3 and 4, then verse 2 is not saying the false prophets passed out of the land. Because they're still there. It must be saying the true prophets passed out of the land and the false prophets are still there. Which is exactly the case we have today. In 1 Corinthians 1, verse 7, he says, why do you keep talking about ice cream? Because I'm trying to get you to see that the word waiting does not mean the same thing necessarily as the word until. So when I say Bob ate ice cream waiting for the train, I think you can see that waiting doesn't necessarily mean until there. You see, waiting and until are two different words. He's reading the passage like this. So that you come behind in no gift until the coming of the Lord. That's the way he's reading. See, if you change the words, you can prove anything. You can, if you change the words of Mark 16:16 and Acts 2:38, you can come up with a Baptist position. If you change the word waiting to until, you can come up with a Pentecostal position. But if you read it waiting like it says, then it doesn't prove the Pentecostal position. You know, let's read it with until. Let's just see how that would do. He wants to change it to until. Let's just see how that would do. So that you come behind in no gift, talking to the Corinthians, until the coming of the Lord. You know what that would imply? That would imply the Corinthians he's writing to would not die until the second coming of Christ. Because he would be telling the Corinthians, he hoped that they would come behind in no gift until the coming of the Lord. That would imply they weren't going to die. Because they wouldn't come behind in any gift until Jesus came back. And Jesus hadn't come back. That means they're still alive. So it's obviously not until. It's obviously waiting, like the text says. And then he brought the chart, past lost books of the Bible. He had, I didn't get them all down, but I think Agabus, four books of Philip, four prophesying daughters, 120 books maybe in Acts 2, Book of Cornelius in Acts 10. Why did he bring that chart up? I'm going to guess that not a single person in this room except him knows why he brought it up. But why? So, are you saying then that these are New Testament laws? These books? You know what Michael's doing? And you tell me if I'm wrong. Is Michael saying that the perfect New Testament law, the complete New Testament law, hasn't come because we don't have the book of Agabus? We don't have the book of Cornelius? You know what Michael's saying? He's saying we don't have the complete New Testament law. That there's lost books that we need. That you would have to get those books to have the complete New Testament law. Agabus, Cornelius, why did he bring it up? You don't know, do you? Okay. Hold my time, Thomas. And so those books aren't part of the New Testament law, right? Aren't we agreed on that? If we're agreed on that, then what was the point? We do have God's New Testament law in whole, complete. Okay. All right. Okay. Here it is. Here is where those things were revealed. They're all written down for us. right? We brought it up, that same question was brought up Thursday night, and we pointed out from the book of Revelation that the book of Revelation was a prophecy. We have it, don't we? Now let's go back to 1 Corinthians 13, 11 through 12. Put up number 25, Mark. Put up number 25. Let's look at these three illustrations. Here's what's going on in 1 Corinthians 13, 11 through 12, Michael. Prophecy, tongues, miraculous knowledge, that is revelation in part, is like speaking, understanding, and thinking as a child. That is, the complete revelation is like becoming a man, putting away childish things, where childish things equal to partial revelation. We have three illustrations here. Three illustrations. This is Paul's point. Prophecy, tongues, miraculous knowledge, that is revelation part, is like seeing someone through a dark glass. The complete revelation is like seeing someone face to face. That's obviously not literally, because we don't see Jesus through a dark glass right now, literally. Prophecy, tongues, miraculous knowledge, that is revelation part, is like knowing in part. The complete revelation is like knowing as I also am known, knowing fully. So this just backs up my point. These are three illustrations saying when the perfect, complete revelation is come, then we'll have all the revelation. We'll have all the revelation. Alright, now put up number three, Mark. Put up number three. If you want to hear it, I have to chase every little rabbit, that's okay. While he's putting up number three, let's go to 1 Thessalonians. Chapter 4, I suppose you're going to know this. Verse 17 says, "Then we, which are alive and remain, shall be caught up together." So many times when the pronouns are used, Michael, like there in 1 Corinthians 13, pronouns like that, "then we, which are alive and remain," Paul doesn't mean that he himself in particular, but he's talking about Christians in general. He's not saying by 1 Thessalonians 4:17 that he would be around when the second coming came. When the Lord comes and they're caught up together in the clouds. He's saying we in the sense of Christians. And that's what he's doing in 1 Corinthians 13. Alright, now let's look at number 3. Now let's look at that. He brought up again, Michael did, brought up again about how did I know that the perfect had to do with quality? Alright? Why was it perfect in quantity? Why was it complete? How much time, Thomas? Okay, good. Well, isn't it easy to tell? Look at Luke 11:36. It says, "If thy whole body therefore be full of life, having no part, dark." Now, is that whole and part of the body, is that quantity? It is, isn't it? Quantity. We're talking about part of the body or the whole body. It's the quantity we're talking about here. All right, so in 1 Corinthians 13, you have part and perfect. Aren't we talking about quantity when you say part? Part of an apple pie, that quantity. So perfect would be the complete quantity. Just like here we have part of a body, what is the complete quantity of that? The whole body. That's how I know it's called that. Perfect in the sense of quantity. That's easy. If you're willing to accept what the Bible says. Now, notice the word perfect is defined by Vine and Thayer as rich to sin, complete, perfect, wanting nothing necessary to completeness. That's where I get the idea also from the definition of the word. Let's look at Luke 11:36 again. How did you know that the part here was no part of the body? How did you know that? Because it's of the same nature as the whole, and the whole is of the body, so it has to be part of the body. Now turn back again to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We're trying to decide what the perfect is. It doesn't say specifically perfect New Testament law, revelation, or it doesn't say perfect second coming of Christ. It doesn't say that. How are we going to tell? Well, in this verse, how did we tell? It didn't tell us part of the body. How did we tell? Well, it's contrasted with whole body, so we knew it was part of the body. Now, what are we going to do in 1 Corinthians 13? It doesn't tell us in so many words what the perfect is, but we know it's of the same nature as the part, the same way we did here. All right? What is the part? Is it a partial second coming of Christ? Is that what it is? Now, if it was talking about a partial second coming of Christ, then the perfect would naturally follow be a perfect, complete second coming of Christ. You follow me? That's not it. It's not that. It says, "For we know in part, and we prophesy in part." The things that are going to stop the things in part are prophecy, tongues, miraculous knowledge. These are all ways by which, means by which, God revealed His New Testament law. In part. When somebody spoke in tongues, were you thinking it was just a bunch of gibberish, or was it God's will for the people? The Bible says in 1 Corinthians 14, as we pointed out in the question, it said when somebody spoke in tongues, he wanted them to have an interpreter so that he could not only edify himself, but edify the church. What do you mean edify the church? What was it? Was it telling them God's will? Something they needed to know? Yes, it was. What about prophecy? Was it telling them God's will, or was it just a bunch of gibberish? It's God's will. These are means by which God revealed His New Testament law. So what would be the same nature as that? Would it be if you have the will of God being revealed in part, what would be the whole or the complete of that? God revealing His will in whole. If the perfect was the second coming of Christ, then the part would have to be a partial second coming. That doesn't make any sense. Now you say, Pat, I just don't see it. I believe you do. Because I believe every one of you can see this in Luke 11:36. And it's exactly the same point as the Luke 11:36. Every one of you can see this has come out no part of the body. Every one of you. And that's because it says whole body. If you can see that, that's exactly the same point I'm making in 1 Corinthians 13. The partial is the means by which God revealed His will in part. So the complete or perfect wouldn't be the second coming of Christ, but would be the means by which God revealed His will in its totality, quantity, the full quantity. And then number 8, Mark, back to Zechariah 13. We showed over and over and over again that this is coming out through prophets. Again, if you just want to remember one thing, look at verses 3 and 4. That true prophets are false prophets in verses 3 and 4. It says they'll prophesy lies. That's false prophets. Therefore, when verse 2 says the prophets will pass out of the land, that couldn't be the false prophets because they wouldn't have passed out of the land if they're still going. So we're talking about true prophets. It says the true prophets will pass out of the land. What time frame? The time frame of the first coming of Christ or the second coming? Well, what about chapter 11, verses 12 and 13, the 30 pieces of silver and the potter's field? First coming, second coming. What about chapter 12, verse 10? They shall look upon me whom they have pierced. That's quoted in John 19:37, applied to Jesus on the cross. What about Zechariah 13, verse 1? Jesus, there's a fountain open for sin and uncleanness. Does anybody here think Jesus is going to die and shed His blood again at the second coming, or is that coming at the first coming? First coming. What about in Zechariah 13, verse 7? Jesus quotes that in Matthew 26:31 to say, I'm the shepherd, you're the sheep, I'm going to be smitten. It turned out to be the next day, I think. And the sheep, the disciples, scattered. First coming or second coming? How much time, Tommy? Now, so look. I think I can do this in 1 minute. It's obviously the time period of the first coming of Christ. Michael hasn't ever told you anything reasonable about how the false prophets passed out of the land during the time period of the first coming of Christ. We know they didn't. The false prophets kept on going then, and they still go today. They didn't pass out of the land during the time period of the first coming of Christ. I'm going to repeat it one more time for you. Look at verses 3 and 4. False prophets, true prophets. If that's false prophets, then the false prophets didn't pass out of the land in verse 2. True prophets passed out of the land during the time period of the first coming of Christ. It matches up perfectly with 1 Corinthians 13. The Bible teaches that tongues and prophecy would cease. You cannot ignore that. It tells us when, and that was the first gift come, and during the time period of the first coming of Christ, 1 Corinthians 13, Zechariah 13, respectively. You cannot ignore it. God said, talking about Jesus, in Hebrews 5, verse 9, God said, He's the author of eternal salvation to all them that obey Him. Now, we have to obey God in this. And we're not obeying Him unless we obey all of it, unless we believe and obey all of it. And that means you have to believe 1 Corinthians 13, what it says clearly, and Zechariah 13, what it says clearly. And if you're not, you forfeit eternal salvation. That's why it is a serious matter. And that's why I drove all the way down here, to show you what the Bible says on these matters. Because I don't want anybody to lose their eternal salvation over something like this. Did you call time? Thank you very much. And Michael, thank you so much for doing it. He's a great man. We appreciate him so much being willing. And John, Tommy and I think both of them did a great job. We appreciate so much you coming. And I just can't tell you how much we appreciate it. And hope you'll just study the Bible for yourself and make up your own mind. Thanks.